This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi guys, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 24, Josias Marquez. In January of this year, two young children showed up on a neighbor's doorstep, saying their mommy had been gone overnight and they didn't know where she was. By the time police arrived, the mother had returned, but the closure of one mystery opened a much larger one. Where was the woman's third child? 26-year-old Sigal Hussein insisted her 5-year-old son, Josias, who had severe health issues and was described as high needs, had gone out of state to stay with his father, but that story quickly fell apart. 2 months later, after authorities were unable to locate Josias, they arrested Sigal on neglect charges and searched her vehicle, where they were horrified to find the partially mummified body of 5-year-old Josias in a duffel bag in the trunk. This is the unimaginable story of Josias Marquez. My sources for this week were the Green Bay Press Gazette, ABC2 WBAY, Metro, NBC15, Fox 11 News, WeAreGreenBay.com, Fox 6 Milwaukee, Facebook, and court documents. Before I get into today's story, I want to give a shout out to my latest patrons, Ashley L. from Colton, Oregon, and a mysterious individual with the username GRQ10751918772207, who I was unable to contact by email. If you recently pledged a monthly donation to the podcast and haven't received an email from me or a shout out by name on the show, please reach out to me at sufferthelittlechildren.pod@gmail.com and make sure you include your name and mailing address so I can send you a handwritten thank you card. If anyone else is interested in making a monthly pledge, which puts me that much closer to my goal of permanently devoting myself full time to the podcast and the blog, you can visit sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com and click Become a Patron in the upper right corner of the screen. I'm also extremely grateful to accept one-time donations, which can be made by visiting sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com/support. For anyone who has contributed, thank you so much. Sigal Abdersheed Hussein, who was born on December 9, 1994, and James Antonio Marquez, who was born on June 4, 1993, met in 2012 through a mutual friend group in San Jose, California. They soon became romantically involved, and by early 2013, Sigal was pregnant with the couple's first son, who I'll call J.M. Right after Sigal became pregnant, James was sent to jail. He missed the birth of his older son by a matter of days. Once he got out of jail, he and Sigal continued their relationship, and she became pregnant with their second son, Josias, in early 2014. In August or September of 2014, while pregnant, Sigal moved to Wisconsin with her mother and sister. Josias Justice Marquez was born on October 18, 2014. About 2 weeks after Josias was born in October, he came down with meningitis and spent the first several weeks of his life in the hospital. Josias survived the illness, but it left him blind and severely disabled, with damage in several areas of his brain. James moved to Wisconsin the month after Josias was born to help care for the children, moving in with Sigal and working a sanitation job on the third shift so he could take care of the kids while Sigal worked. As a result of his medical issues shortly after birth, Josias suffered from such severe seizures that he had to be heavily sedated for most of his short life. He was nonverbal, suffered seizures multiple times a day, and could not walk or crawl, as well as developing cerebral palsy. His food had to be pureed, and he usually took nutrition through a bottle, although he was eventually able to be spoon-fed. Unable to crawl or walk, Josias, known fondly as JoJo to his family, was transported everywhere in a stroller. Nonetheless, he had a great big smile and an infectious giggle that he loved to share. During his time in Wisconsin, James was arrested and extradited back to California to serve short jail sentences a few times. But when he was in Wisconsin, he said, he provided most of the children's care, feeding them, getting them ready for school each day, and making all of their school and medical arrangements and appointments. He administered Josias's medications and accompanied him to the hospital when he twice had to be admitted to adjust the doses for his seizure medications. Even when she was around, Segal left the children's care to him. In January of 2019, James grew sick of Segal's laziness and unwillingness to care for their kids and decided to move back to California. By that time, the couple had a third child together, who I'll call A.M., whose paternity was evidently in question based on court records. It was eventually proven, however, that James was the little girl's father. James said that once he moved back to California, Segal refused to allow him to speak with the children at first, but she ultimately relented, eventually allowing J.M. and A.M. first to visit and then to move in with their father. Of Josias, James said,
I did ask to have him come too, but Segal never was interested in bringing him out to California.
When James was arrested again in October of 2019, the children returned to their mother's home in Wisconsin, which is where they were living when Josias died one of the slowest, most brutal deaths I've ever had to cover. On January 26, 2020, a neighbor of 26-year-old Segal Hussein called police to report seeing two young, unsupervised children outside apartment 8 at 2070 Riverview Drive in the village of Howard, Wisconsin. The neighbor initially reported that on January 26th, Josiah's 6-year-old brother, J.M., knocked on her door repeatedly throughout the morning, giving her some items, including a cup of hot chocolate for her to drink. How cute is that? At one point, he showed up with his almost 3-year-old sister, A.M., who was only wearing a sweater around her waist and a pair of shoes. When the two small children returned to the neighbor's home at about 1:30 p.m., J.M. admitted to the woman that their mom had left the night before and they didn't know where she was. The neighbor had noticed that Segal's vehicle hadn't been parked outside her apartment since about 11 p.m. the night before. At that point, she made a report to the Brown County Sheriff's Office. Just before law enforcement responded to the call, Segal arrived home, saying she had just run to Walgreens and Quick Trip, leaving her kids alone for about 10 minutes. Deputy Brooklyn Vandehei, who responded to the neighbor's report, recalled a similar recent incident in which J.M. had been left alone for about 30 minutes. After being told that CPS would follow up with Segal, Deputy Vandehei went to Walgreens, showing Segal's photo to the employees, who confirmed they were familiar with the woman and denied she had been in the store that day. The deputy even confirmed this by watching video surveillance tapes. When Deputy Vandehei returned to Segal's home to continue questioning her, she confronted Segal with her findings. Segal insisted she was shopping during the time she was gone, but she extended her time away from her kids to about 40 minutes, saying she also drove past her boyfriend's house in Green Bay. She refused to cooperate any more than that. The children were removed from the home by Brown County Child Protective Services, who placed them temporarily in the care of Segal's mother. At that point, investigators found out that Segal had a third child, 5-year-old Josias, who was described as high needs and required extensive care. CPS told police they would follow up with Segal. Segal was initially interviewed by a police officer and a CPS worker on January 28th, a day after her 6-year-old underwent a forensic interview. Segal stated during her interview that she had been gone on the 26th for no longer than an hour. When asked about her middle child, she told the interviewers that Josias was living with his father in Michigan. Segal told the investigators that Josias's father was a man named Miguel Marcelo, who she said lived in Escanaba, Michigan, and who she said she had known since childhood in San Jose, California. She said that Josias had been with Miguel since the man randomly showed up and took the little boy on January 9th. She said she remembered the date because her older son was homesick from school that day, which meant she called out of work. During a later visit from investigators, Segal told them she had no pictures of Josias, and that when Miguel picked him up, he took all of Josias's personal items with him, including every photo of him. She could not provide a phone number for the boy's father, saying that when he called her, he always used a private or unrestricted number. None of the investigators was able to confirm that Miguel Marcelo even existed. Throughout the months of February and March, CPS repeatedly got in touch with Segal, attempting to make contact with Josias. On March 25th, a Brown County sheriff's officer and a CPS worker, paid Seagal a visit. She wasn't able to explain where she was on the morning of January 26th when her children were spotted outside by themselves, and she provided the authorities with no further information on Josias's whereabouts. She continued to claim that she did not have any contact information for his father. Investigators received information on March 27th that contradicted Seagal's statement about the identity of Josias's father, who they determined was a man named James Marquez, who lived in San Jose, California. After interviewing several people, police determined that no one other than Seagal had reported seeing her 5-year-old son since November 25th, 2019. On March 30th, due to inconsistencies in her story and her refusal to be truthful or cooperate with investigators, Seagal Hussein was arrested on suspicion of child neglect. Her children were taken into CPS custody and placed into foster care instead of with Seagal's mother this time. Police obtained a search warrant for her home and her vehicle. The vehicle, which was found at one of Seagal's friends' homes in Green Bay, was secured overnight by the Brown County Sheriff's Office until it could be transported the next day to the Wisconsin State Crime Lab in Madison. While the car was being processed for forensic evidence on March 31st, investigators conducted interviews with neighbors, teachers, and family members of Seagal and her children. At around 3 p.m. that day, the Sheriff's Office was contacted by the crime lab with some disturbing news. The remains of a child were found in the trunk of Seagal's vehicle. On April 1st, Seagal appeared in Brown County Court for a probable cause hearing regarding various criminal charges, which had not yet been officially filed. Her bond was set at $500,000 cash, and the probable cause affidavit was, for the time being, sealed. On April 2nd, the state crime lab assisted in searching Seagal's home. On April 15th, results of an autopsy confirmed the identity of the body as that of her 5-year-old son, Josias. Seagal's mother, Amal Ismail, spoke with a reporter through an interpreter. Seagal's family is from Somalia, which is a country in Africa, although she and her sister were born or at least raised in America.
What I know, my daughter Seagal, is that she was a loving mother, and I believe that she didn't kill her own son. And what I believe is that it was not her intention to hurt or to kill her own child. She don't know why Seagal said the baby was with his dad, but mom said dad was not caring. He left the kids with Seagal. He was in California. She was very stressed. She was very busy, and she was having some tough time.
Seagal was charged in April with hiding her son's body, and court documents revealed that what sounded like an utterly disgusting case of neglect was even worse than anyone thought. Josias, on top of the blindness and seizures resulting from his newborn bout of meningitis, was also diagnosed with cerebral palsy and epilepsy. One of his doctors had told his mother that without his medications, Josias's seizures could cause a fatal outcome. Of course, any mother in her right mind would religiously administer the child's medications, right? No, instead of doing what a decent parent would do, that is, give the kid his medicine, Seagal told investigators she had not given Josias his medications since 2018, instead deciding to treat him with CBD oil.
First of all, a fucking pardon?
Look, I have nothing against CBD oil. I carry a tincture around in my purse, or at least I did when I was able to leave the house. I find it really helps with stress-related anxiety, and it has also helped de-escalate some of my migraine attacks before they really take hold. But to be used exclusively to treat cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and potentially life-threatening seizures?
It's going to be a no for me, dog.
Medical records confirm that Josias had not received medical treatment for his conditions since 2018 and was not taking the medications prescribed to him. Oh, but that's not all. Josias was reportedly severely malnourished as well. One of his former daycare teachers told investigators that Josias was
always very thin,
and that his mother provided him an
inadequate stroller that did not properly support him.
He was, of course, unable to walk or move much at all. The teacher also said Josias missed daycare
in spurts
and that his mother's excuses for his absences were vague at best. The director of the daycare made a report to Child Protective Services about Josias's apparent malnutrition, his lack of food, and his lack of communication with staff and other children. Investigators interviewed a family advocate for the Howard Suamico School District who said she conducted 2 home visits at the Hussein home in 2018. Because she never made contact with Josias, she filed a report with CPS about concerns the little boy was being left home alone and that she had been unable to see him during her visits. A school district social worker told police she became involved with the Hussein Marquez family in January of 2019 due to Josias' special needs and that she, too, had a hard time connecting with Seagal. The only time she made contact with Josias was at their first meeting. Many child abusers become extremely adept at dodging visits from CPS, as we've unfortunately seen in several other cases. School officials from the school Josias attended, Bay Harbor Elementary in Suamico, told investigators they had not seen Josias since winter break in December. I have to wonder if January 9th, when Seagal said her older son was sick and she called out of work, was the day Josias actually died and she took the day to clean up the mess she'd made, hiding his body and getting rid of all of his belongings. The autopsy did indicate Josias was severely malnourished, but his official cause of death was not determined, pending histology and toxicology reports. On March 26th, a phone call was recorded between Seagal and Josias's father, James Marquez, although it is not clear who made or authorized the recording. During the call, Seagal told James that she
fucked up and was in a hell of trouble.
James said that phone call
was the first time Seagal ever said that I wasn't Josias's father. The things she said didn't make sense, and I could tell she was lying.
During that March 26th phone call, James said, he could tell Seagal was being untruthful, and he became worried about Josias' safety. He told investigators that, in his opinion, Seagal was embarrassed of their son's disability and treated the other two children much better than she treated Josias. James said,
I can't say that I want to believe that Seagal would ever intentionally harm him, but I could see that Seagal could stop providing care for him. Seagal never liked caring for him. She would treat the other two children so much better than him. I believe she was embarrassed that he had a disability and needed so much care. I wonder if she stopped caring for him when she found out that I may have to go to jail for 4 years.
When the results of Josias's autopsy were released, what we learned was utterly sickening. The 5-year-old boy weighed 20 pounds, and his body was
significantly undernourished, mummified, had mold in places on his body, and that a long, dark-colored hair was located on the decedent's left thigh. Based on the decomposition of the decedent had been deceased for months.
The doctor said that Josias's undernourishment was severe and would have created a significant risk of death. Seagal Hussein has been charged with chronic neglect of a child resulting in death, hiding a corpse, 2 counts of neglecting a child, and 5 counts of obstructing an officer. She's being held in the Brown County Jail. If convicted of the charges against her, she could face up to 80 years in prison. Josias was cremated, and his father, along with James's mother, Tina, and her sister, flew to Green Bay to receive his ashes. During the trip, James was able to see and spend time with his now 7-year-old son and 3-year-old daughter, but he was not able to take them back to California with him. It seems the paternal side of the family has some hoops to jump through before that can happen. Seagal's mother, Ismal, said she hoped her surviving grandchildren could remain in the Green Bay area rather than returning to California with their father, but, and this is just my opinion, I think it would be best for them to be surrounded by a large, loving, extended family, including young cousins, and not essentially alone in Wisconsin with very few family members, and only those of their mother at that. James and his family held a small memorial service for the little boy they called Jojo on April 25th. Seagal appeared in court on April 1st for a probable cause hearing and again on April 15th when the judge granted prosecutors 2 weeks to file a criminal complaint. Brown County District Attorney David Lassie has said his office will determine the appropriate charges when an official cause of death for Josias is determined.
Clearly, there's reason to believe that Ms. Hussein had something to do with her child's death, and then no doubt as the probable cause with respect to her hiding the body of the child.
Seagal was represented at the hearings by Assistant State Public Defender Amanda Tunin. According to court records, Seagal was charged with a felony count of forgery, uttering, with the modifier of party to a crime, which means she may not have been the primary actor in the crime, but she was willing to assist. The forgery charge indicates that Seagal, or someone she was assisting, knowingly attempted to pass a forged or counterfeited document. It's unclear whether this charge is in any way related to Josias's death, but it was filed on the same day as her original arrest. Seagal also faces 2 charges that were filed on March 9th of this year, operating a motor vehicle without a valid license and operating a motor vehicle without proof of insurance. The charges relate to the 2009 Nissan Murano station wagon in which Josias' remains were found. This could have something to do with the reason Seagal's vehicle was found not at her home in Howard, but at her friend's home in Green Bay. In early May, the criminal complaint against Seagal was released, which shed more light on the family situation and the relationship between Seagal and James, who has thus far been identified as Josias' real father, despite Seagal's initial claims to the contrary. When it first came out, I sat and read the entire massive document, and I learned a lot of things I almost wish I hadn't. As a mother and a human being, I was, and continue to be, disgusted, horrified, and bewildered at the apparent inhumanity of now 27-year-old Seagal Hussein, Josias' mother, and I use that term in the biological sense only. If what she's accused of is true, this woman just stopped caring for her disabled son. She gave up on giving him medical care, attention, and even food. She abandoned him in every way that mattered. The charging document also notes that Seagal had been receiving SSI assistance for Josias, even after he was, as we now know, dead. What we didn't already know was that his decomposed remains were found in a duffel bag in the cargo area of her black Nissan Murano. She allegedly packed his malnourished little body into a duffel bag. Seagal used a months-long visit from her younger sister as one of several excuses to explain Josias' sporadic school attendance over the past year. School officials also reported their concerns to CPS that Josias might be at times left alone. One of Josias' daycare teachers described Seagal as
very nonverbal
and said she
rarely talked to me. Typically, if we did communicate, it would be me asking questions. I would ask if Josias ate or how his night was before. Her answers were always very short and non-informative. The same would happen at pickup. I would share information with her about his day, and she seemed not interested and would sometimes just leave as I was talking to her.
The same teacher also described Josias as
nonverbal. He never spoke and was in a stroller. He would babble and make noises but would not use words. He was much like an infant. He would cry when something was wrong or if he needed something. He would laugh and giggle if the kids played with him or if I read to him. He knew when it was time to eat. He would hear the bottle of Pediasure being shook, and he would cry. He sometimes held his own bottle, but because his stroller was so upright, I would have to tip the stroller back so he could be in a position to hold the bottle. Also, he would drink the bottle very fast.
The teacher mentioned that Seagal provided minimal nutrition for Josias, saying each of his meals consisted of a bottle of Pediasure and an applesauce packet, and that was if Seagal remembered to bring it. The teacher also said that Josias' stroller, which investigators described as a basic umbrella stroller, did not offer him enough support, and that
if he would get mad, he would hit the sides of his head on metal bars on each side of the stroller.
Josias' older brother, J.M., was also in the teacher's transitional kindergarten class for a time. She said,
I did not see him much, but I noticed his hair was not brushed and his clothes were tattered and dirty, but he always had nice shoes. This was the same for Josias.
The teacher sounds like she actually cared about this poor little guy, saying,
Seagal never provided any toys or attachments on the stroller to comfort him. I sent police a second picture of a scarf I made for Josias, which I attached to the stroller. He used to rub it against his face. It would calm him. I also pointed out how the back of the stroller sagged, which I always thought looked so uncomfortable. I would often take him out of the stroller and place him on a mat so he could have some time out of the stroller.
She also described how the stroller would leave red marks and indentations on the back of Josias' legs and expressed concerns about how uncomfortable it must have been for him. The daycare also contacted CPS about their concerns, but the teacher was unsure of the outcome of the CPS inquiry. According to police, Seagal lied as often as she could about pretty much every possible detail in the stories she gave them, rolling right into a new lie whenever she was confronted. This woman is like an even less intelligent Casey Anthony, and who knew that was even possible? Friends of Seagal who had known her for about a year, including the one who rented the home where Seagal's station wagon was stored when it was impounded in March, told investigators they knew she had three children, but that she rarely, if ever, talked about Josias, and they had never met or even seen him. One friend said that after speaking with police, she looked through Seagal's Facebook photos, noting that her friend had hundreds of photos of J.M. and A.M., but none of Josias. The friend also mentioned that Seagal met her current boyfriend, Jaylene Edwards, around the beginning of January, that he began spending the night at Seagal's house about a month ago, and then moved in with her around the last week of March. She said,
I only know that he's from Milwaukee.
The criminal complaint document also provided a lot more detail from Josias' autopsy, which investigators attended and observed. The autopsy took place on April 2, 2020 at the Dane County Medical Examiner's Office by Dr. Vincent Tranquilda. Dr. Tranquilda, who indicated that the definitive cause of death couldn't be determined until he received results of histology and toxicology, noted several factors related to malnourishment, including wasting of the temple areas, sunken cheeks, lack of fat and muscle wasting of the neck, sunken areas surrounding the collarbones, sunken ribs, convexity of the abdomen, prominent bones protruding in the shoulders, hips, and back, wasting of bilateral buttocks, atrophy or wasting of musculature of extremities, knobby knees, lanugo hair on extremities, which is commonly seen on individuals with eating disorders such as anorexia or bulimia. Josias weighed only 20 pounds at the time of his autopsy, as compared to medical visits in late 2016 and early 2017, when he weighed upwards of 33 pounds. His maternal aunt used to call him her Chubba Wubba. Hell, one page of the medical records investigators reviewed, this one from 2017, indicated that Josias was clinically obese and that the family should learn feeding cues to ensure he did not overeat. Medical records indicated the last time Josias received medical care was at a doctor appointment on October 12, 2018. He was due to receive a number of immunizations on October 18, 2018, but these were never administered. At the October visit, there were 5 prescription medications listed for Josias, who weighed 33.81 pounds and was described by the doctor as
thin but not emaciated.
The records show the doctor explained the importance to Seagal of follow-up care for her son, but this was the last medical care of any kind that Josias was documented to have received. Seagal told investigators that she felt none of his medications were helping him, and she didn't like the side effects, including excessive sedation and irritability, so after doing some research of her own and joining some Facebook groups, she discontinued his medication and treated him solely with CBD oil. Dr. Thomas Huffer, the family's pediatrician, told investigators that all 3 children consistently missed scheduled appointments with
little to no notice from the parents and no effort made to reschedule.
The doctor reported that Josias missed at least 13 appointments, J.M. missed 3, and A.M., the boy's younger sister, missed 7. That's with Dr. Huffer's office alone. He also told police,
I'm also aware of an additional 10 appointments that Josias missed with other medical providers besides my office.
Josias's neurologist, Dr. Terrence Edgar, and Dr. Huffer worked together in regard to the little boy's prescriptions, and they determined that after his last round of prescriptions was filled in March of 2019, he would have run out of medication by September of 2019. That wouldn't have mattered anyway, since Seagal had, by her own account, decided in 2018 not to medicate her son at all. Seagal Hussein officially faces 9 charges in the death of her son, including felony chronic neglect of a child with the consequence of death, hiding the corpse of a child, neglecting a child under 6 years of age, and 5 counts of obstructing an officer for all of the bullshit she allegedly fed police during their investigation into Josias' disappearance. Again, shades of Casey Anthony. Due to the pandemic, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, like courts in most U.S. states, understandably limited in-person hearings, so any hearings in the case are taking place over video conference. At one hearing, Seagal's criminal defense attorney, Timothy Hogan, told the court that his client wishes to wait until she can physically be present in the courtroom for her preliminary hearing, rather than have it take place via video conference. Since that is her right under the law, the tentative date for the preliminary hearing was pushed back to June 26th, and at that time, for the same reason, it was pushed back again to August 6th at 9:30 a.m., 2 days after this episode's released. I'll keep you guys updated if I can find out if that hearing takes place or not. Josias' older brother and younger sister are still in Wisconsin, but their paternal grandmother, Tina Amador, is working her hardest, even taking CPS classes, to get them home to California. The kid's father, James, is now out of jail, and he has reportedly found a job and a vehicle, and is currently seeking a home big enough to accommodate himself and his 7 and 3-year-old kids. This case epitomizes tragedy. A little boy who needed so much love, care, and attention was abandoned by everyone who was supposed to love him, especially the mother who was tasked with keeping him alive. She couldn't even be bothered to do that, and I can't think of anything more selfish than what Seagal Hussein is accused of doing to her own 5-year-old son. Based on all the documentation and all of my research, this case boils down to one simple premise. Seagal Hussein simply stopped caring for and about her second child. Josias was allegedly the victim of a mother who just didn't give a shit about him. She couldn't be bothered to take him to the doctor, to oversee his medication regimen, or even to spoon pureed food into his mouth. If she's guilty of these crimes, she starved that helpless, vulnerable little boy, who literally couldn't even speak for himself, to death. Josias was obviously adored by most of his family. His maternal aunt made the following Facebook post after his death was confirmed. "This broke my heart. I really feel for both sides of the family here.
From the day you were born, I was in love with everything about you. From your beautiful dimples to that little beauty dot on your face. Handsome was an understatement. It's crazy how one little human can just pop up in your life one day and change your everything. I didn't understand patience until God gave us you. You opened my mind to so many things in life and put a certain love in my heart that made me extra vulnerable and so much softer. You had nothing but love in you, and I would have done anything to anyone to protect that. I'll never fully forgive myself for this happening to you, Papa. I know it's selfish, but I wish you were here. Only thing keeping me sane is knowing you're in heaven doing all the things you couldn't do on earth. I thank God for your life, and I'm beyond proud to have been your Tia, Jojo."
If nothing else, Josias is no longer suffering. Wherever he is, I hope he's running around, laughing and playing, sharing his smile, his giggle, and his gorgeous light with everyone and everything around him. Rest in peace, precious boy. That's it for this week, guys. Join me next week for another case. Please subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes, leave a voicemail, and become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive show merch. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter at STLC Pod. I've posted a photo album for today's case on Facebook and Instagram. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildren.pod@gmail.com. You can also read about today's case as well as many others at sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast was written and produced by Lane. Music and sound effects for the show were created using sounds from audiojungle.com. Always remember, hug your babies a bit closer tonight. Until next week, bye guys.